Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, I'm going to go back to The Last Dance yet again, man. This is the gift that continues to give. The gift that just keeps right on giving. It's like, I don't know, if I had to come up with an analogy, it's like taking a cinder block and dropping it into a pond because there are ripples that just keep going on and on and on and on. This thing never stops. You have the initial series, then you have the reactions to the series, like Horace Grant saying that Michael Jordan is, quote, a damn snitch.
That's a damn snitch right there.
That's a damn snitch right there. That's Mike. And Grant is not the only teammate who is pissed about that series. As I mentioned yesterday, Jackie McMullen had reported earlier this month that people close to Scottie Pippen say that he's been wounded and he's disappointed about how he was portrayed in the documentary. David Kaplan reports that Pippen is, quote, so angry and, quote, beyond livid about the depiction. He reportedly did not like Jordan calling him selfish for how he handled his injury. And he, quote, felt like up until the last few minutes of Game 6 against the Jazz, it was just bash Scotty, bash Scotty, bash Scotty. Quote, end of quote. I could see how Scotty would feel that way. I get it. While Jordan did praise Pippen early in that doc, most of the Pippen content after that was about Pippen's lowest moments and questioning Pippen's toughness. That pissed me off too. I mean, with a friend like Mike, who needs enemies? Not that Jordan probably cares, but that really is kind of a rough look when your running mate on the team for more than a decade and one of the greatest players of all time is, quote, beyond livid with how you kept running the bus over him time and time again. And then you've got another teammate who helped you win three of those rings calling you a damn snitch. These are two really important guys to Jordan. But I don't think that's going to bother him very much, because he seemed to be fine with both of those storylines being in there in the first place. And it doesn't appear that he's all that close with either Pippen or Grant, and it doesn't seem like he wants to be close with either one of them anyway. But the aftermath has not been all bad when it comes to how Jordan treats his teammates. The Undefeated has a story involving Jordan, Brad Sellers, and an Olive Garden. In other words, what if I told you that one of the nicest things that Jordan ever did for a teammate took place at an Olive Garden, and that it did not involve unlimited breadsticks and salad? Story goes like this. Sellers was drafted by the Bulls in 86. Jerry Krause told him the plan would be for him to become the first 7-foot small forward in the NBA. Like he'd be the ultimate stretch four, maybe even a stretch three. But then Grant and Pippen started to emerge as players. Sellers probably looked at the writing on the wall, realized he was not going to get that much playing time, and then he wanted out. So Sellers came up with his own plan. Quote, I told MJ, you got to go in there and tell them that this is not going to work for me here. End quote. Sellers said that Jordan then said to him, you really want me to do that? And Sellers was insistent. Quote, absolutely. So Jordan said he'd do it. The next day, according to this story, Sellers is at, where else? The Olive Garden. And he's sitting there and he's enjoying a plate of chicken parm when the restaurant manager approaches and says, quote, Michael Jordan is on the phone. Remember, this is 1989. It's not so easy just to track people down. Not like it is now. And yet somehow, some way, Jordan knew that Sellers was going to be at the Olive Garden at that time. I don't know, maybe the guy always had a chicken parm at the same OG at the same time every single day. Maybe he really was family there. Maybe he liked doing the math.
Okay, so I've done the math on this never-ending pasta bowl. 42 different sauce and pasta combinations.
Well, you do the math, I'm doing the Alfredo.
Olive Garden's never-ending pasta bowl with new Asiago garlic Alfredo. Pick any sauce and pasta combination, then another.
Mess slays me every single time. Anyway, Jordan tracks him down at the OG. Sellers takes the call. And according to Sellers, this is what Jordan said. Quote, they're trading you to Seattle tomorrow. Good luck, B. End quote. That's incredible. Like, forget making up the LeBradford Smith stuff. Forget all the runs that Mike took at Isaiah. Forget about him laughing out loud at Gary Payton. Michael Jordan calling a teammate at Olive Garden to let him know that he's been traded might be the finest moment of his career. Like, you do the Alfredo, Sellers. I'll do the trading at your direction. You think having your delicious chicken parm being interrupted by the manager to tell you that Mike Jordan's on the phone would be a good thing? But having your Olive Garden meal interrupted to be told that you've been traded to Seattle is pretty horrible. The only thing worse than that is that Sellers brought the whole thing on himself. I mean, that was not a case of Jordan being a bully. That was not a case of Jordan deciding, man, I don't like this guy. He's soft. He doesn't fit. We don't need him. I'm going to trade his ass. I'm going to wait for him to sit down for his favorite plate of chicken parm at his favorite restaurant, and I'm going to send his ass to Seattle. I mean, that would be like in character for what we've seen the entire doc. Except that's not what happened. Sellers went to Jordan and said, hey, you got to get me out of here. So he did. And Sellers said after, quote, when I got to Seattle, I said, what in the hell did I just do? I was young and dumb, end quote. I'll tell you what you just did. You wanted more playing time. You wanted more chicken parm. You got them both. You did the math, didn't you?
Do the math. I'm doing the Alfredo.
That's like one of those jokes that even though you've heard it 100 times, it makes you laugh every time. So good. So what does that say about Jordan, though, and the week he's had? What's that say about Jordan and his rep? They're calling the Olive Garden to tell a guy that he got traded is like the nicest thing somebody has said about him this week. I mean, Horace called him a damn snitch. Scotty apparently is, quote, livid with his depiction of Mike. Mike's probably sitting there like, what's Scott so pissed about? It's not like I said he was cheap. It's not like I called him no tippin' pippin'. I did him a favor. I put him in my dock. I guarantee Mike's probably sitting there like, why is he so mad? Man, I hyped him up. Didn't I call him my best teammate ever? Didn't I say there wouldn't be 6 rings without him? Well, yes, you did say those things, Mike. And you also called him selfish. And you questioned his toughness. And you weren't even there when he didn't come off the bench. And yet you spent a lot of time on that in the dock. Especially curious since the doc is supposed to be about the last dance, the last year. That wasn't your last year. And you weren't even there for that. You were playing baseball. Mike's like, yeah, you act like I called the guy up at the Olive Garden and traded him. That was Sellers, not Scott. We are joined by Denny Hamlin. Denny, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Doing good.
All right, so you're coming off a win last night that had rain, a driver flipping off another driver, a fox on the track during a caution, and more. But first off, how does it feel to wake up this morning as a winner and having a win under your belt?
It's good. Those mornings are always better than the contrary. So, yeah, I mean, it's been really good to start the year off now with a couple wins and just 6 or 7 races. And, you know, we're obviously gearing up for the Coke 600 this weekend in Charlotte, like you talked about. Having a special paint scheme there with FedEx for the small businesses is a big deal for us.
I'm going to talk about that in just 1 minute. I think that's a great deal. What about the car last night? Like, how did you feel about the car and the team's strategy in the early part of the race?
You know, I thought we were pretty good right from the get-go. I mean, we, you know, took with the invert, so we had to start 16th because we finished 5th in the on the race on Sunday, and they inverted the top 20. So we started, you know, mid-pack, and it took us a little while to get towards the front, but we were pretty good all day and really kind of got at our best right at the end of the race when it really counted.
We're talking to Denny Hamlin. So you made that last pit stop, and then there was a caution by Clint Bowyer, which shook things up a little bit with 34 laps to go. You stayed out on the track, and your crew chief told you over the radio, quote, you ain't going to like it, but we're going to have to eat our vegetables here, end quote. What was going through your head at that point?
He knows I don't like vegetables, so he knows I'm not going to like the call. But we had to stay out there. We had just pitted for tires 8 laps earlier, which is our last set of new tires. And so we had to stay out there. And that kind of made our bed where we at least got to control the restart. We were able to hold those guys off for a lap. They ended up getting in a crash, and then the rain came. So it was it obviously worked out in our favor. We were a race winning car anyway, but you know, it's interesting to win one. That was definitely the first one in my career that I've won that's been rain shortened.
Capital One knows life does not alert you about your credit card. Hey, couch surfers, we've got nonstop tunes to keep you rocking while you work. Oh, and Colleen. Yes, you, Colleen with a K. Your free trial of Movie Plus ends tomorrow and your card may be charged. Do you want to continue or do you want to cancel? Sweet. So, meet Eno, the Capital One assistant. Eno looks out for surprise charges, like when free trials expire, and helps you if you need to fix them. Eno, another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you are not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Limitations apply. Denny, speaking of that crash, like, you didn't pit on the restart with 29 laps to go, and then there was that collision between Kyle Busch and Chase Elliott behind you. How aware were you of the crash?
I saw it in my rearview mirror because I saw that, you know, I had Busch beside me in the middle of the corner. I saw Chase coming up behind me on the corner exit, and then I saw Chase kind of spinning around. So I didn't know what caused the contact, but I saw the end of it. That was about it.
Denny Hamlin is joining us. All right, so that's your third Cup win at Darlington. You made the point that it's a driver's racetrack. Can you lay that out for me? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I just think that there are certain circuits that we race that the driver can make a bigger impact or difference on his day and the success of his day. You know, it's different than other sports that play on the same size court or basketball field or a football field each and every week. All the lines are the same, right? They're drawn the same. Well, for us, you know, we have different types of racetracks, short tracks, intermediate, super speedways. So it takes a different type of racing skill set for each one. But that track in particular has a mix of a few. And as a driver, you can move around and make your car faster if you've got a higher skill level.
Denny Hamlin joining us. And then, Denny, after the race, you broke out a face mask. There was a mask of your own face. I thought it was an incredible look. Where did the idea come from? And then how pleased were you with the way it looked?
Well, you know, it happened really quick, and we had to kind of rush it because it came together within like a day or so. So getting it printed off, making sure everything was the right size, whether it be my mouth or my nose, was a bit of a challenge. But I think we still could make it better if we had to do it all over again. But I'm not sure that I will. It was such a good hit. You know, you don't want to ruin a good thing. But certainly I'm glad it was a happy face because, you know, it would have sucked to have had a bad week. Or a crash or something, then you have to go put on your happy mask.
That would have sucked for sure. I hope people are watching on CBS Sports Network. We just rolled it in. I think it looks awesome. It's great. Now, you finished in the top five on Sunday in your first race back. What was the experience like of getting back into a car and racing after so much time off?
You know, it wasn't as big of a challenge as I thought it would be, especially with no practice or anything, just kind of firing off. But I mean, all of these drivers are so good, and the teams are so good. They can adapt to kind of any situation that's kind of thrown at them. So we had good success both races, and I think that moving forward, these teams are going to continue, and drivers are going to continue to just get better and better to be able to adapt with no practice.
I guess I could say that maybe you stayed sharp or kind of sharp by staying active in iRacing during the time away from the track. You had a now famous moment where you were driving and your daughter Taylor came up to talk to you. You were about to go in for a pit stop, so the timing was nearly perfect, but then the screen went black. For those who don't know what happened, what is the backstory behind that?
Well, it started early that morning when I was making the kids breakfast. She found a remote in the kitchen, just a universal remote, that I don't know if it has batteries or not. If the batteries are in, it's probably dead. But she just kept playing this game where if she pointed the remote at you and she hit pause, you had to stop moving. If she hit mute, you had to stop talking. If she hit power, then you had to disappear. So she's carrying around this remote all day, and she wants to go downstairs and ride go-karts. And I'm like, you know, hang on, give me a second. And she becomes very frustrated. She's got the remote in her hand, hits the power button to maybe on accident or to make me disappear, and instead she shut off my monitors on my computer.
Awesome.
So I'm racing blind and I ended up crashing.
That is awesome. I don't know why the kids are turning the universal remote on us as parents. I would like to get the universal remote and turn it back on them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty funny. So what else did you do with your time away from the track besides iRacing?
Well, really, just worked on physical fitness. I mean, trying to spend this time getting projects done that takes time and you don't have time to do while I'm in the middle of my normal racing season. So just, you know, trying to give myself a little project each day to accomplish. And really, I enjoyed these 2 months of kind of being able to work on myself personally. And I think that, you know, we're starting to see benefits now on track for all the work that I've put in.
Denny Hamlin joins us. Now, you and I have talked in the past about your connection to Michael Jordan. How much were you able to watch The Last Dance, and what did you make of what you saw?
It was absolutely incredible. And yesterday, you know, fortunate for me, I got to watch the very last episode an hour before I headed down to Darlington yesterday to race. So the motivation is there to be great, right? To push yourself to that next level. The level that Jordan had in him, you know, naturally, it seemed like. So I think that I never thought of myself as the most talented out there, but I feel like I outwork and outthink some guys. And so I've never been really great at sports. I've just worked really hard at them. When I first started golf, I stunk. So I went to work and I became a 3 handicap, you know. So I put in the work because I'm competitive and I understand that fire that he's got.
That's a serious stick. That's no joke, a 3. So as I mentioned off the very top, you and FedEx are unveiling a special paint scheme ahead of this weekend's race in Charlotte. You're paying tribute to small business owners. How did that come to be, and why is that so important to you?
Well, me and my father used to own a small business in Virginia, and we understand, you know, small business is kind of the heartbeat of our country and our economy. So FedEx actually started this small business grant. They're going to donate $1 million to grant for the small businesses to support them. And you can go to FedEx/support-small-grants to learn more. But, you know, we're going to have a special paint scheme. That's something we usually do not have in our FedEx Camry. It looks the same almost every week. But you've seen that throughout this whole coronavirus and pandemic, they've continued to deliver.
Earlier this month, a legendary caller and a former Smack-Off champ named Silk Bra tweeted a pic of a beach volleyball game to his local police department in Huntington Beach. And he tweeted to the cops to, quote, come down and arrest these kooks, end quote. That was a tweet. A picture with that caption. That snitch job might have lived on Twitter exclusively and not seen the light of day beyond Twitter if not for Brad in Corona's telephone call about it the very next day right here.
Silk Bra in Huntington Beach took to Twitter to narc out 4 dudes playing beach volleyball. The dude added his local police department with the photo, and they responded as though they actually cared about this garbage. After that narking, Silk took a victory lap on the Petros and Money show, congratulating himself for keeping the town of Huntington Beach safe from people enjoying themselves outside. Silk, you need to chill out, brah. You're cracking, man. Narc.
Brah.
Narc.
Brah.
Narc.
Brah.
Narc, brah.
B-I-C, brah. There's your defending champ. But Silk Bra is a former champ. And Silk Bra has pretty much floated through the jungle for the past 2 decades. And for the most part, he's been the lovable beach bum. Yet he was quickly glossed a snitch, a narc, a communist, a socialist, and a rat. Now, I said it then, I'll say it now. I'm not taking sides. I'm just taking phone calls. Speaking of which, Silk did call in the very next day, and he didn't try to make an excuse. In fact, he doubled down on his efforts to clean up the beach by any means necessary, even if those means were tagging his local police department in a tweet with a picture of 4 volleyball players. Damn, Alvy. I just thought of something in the middle of that. I had a thought in the middle of the thought. I owe you a minute, don't I? That'll happen. Alvy, you got to get on top of your stuff, man. Dude, you're the one who keeps me straight on those minutes. All right, so anyway. Silk is not making excuses. He's not trying to explain it. He doubled down. And I'm not going to lie. I respect Narc Bra for not backing down. You may not, but I do. That narc, he's got principles. That rat has integrity. He's not coming off it. So, fast forward to this week. A lot has changed in America since Brad's telephone call. Now golf courses and restaurants and certain stores are beginning to slowly reopen. And as they do, they're trying to figure out exactly how they can run their business. And in the world that has changed, how can they do this while adhering to certain guidelines? In an agenda sent out to the Huntington Beach City Council, a few local business owners proposed that restaurants be allowed to open up seating outdoors. Now, that'd be a major step in the return to normalcy here in Cali. Every single restaurant in California has been takeout only. So a few places want approved outdoor seating. And in a proposal to the city council, these business owners cited a study from Lithuania in which outdoor seating at restaurants had been successful and safe. So they were quick to cite that study. The proposal in Huntington Beach was a topic at a town hall meeting, which was open to the public on Wednesday. And guess who in the hell showed up to voice his opinion on that matter? That's freaking right. The official, unofficial mayor of HB. And give this a listen. I'm talking about Narc Bra.
Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I've been here since 72, lived here my whole life. There's some people out there who don't even live here. I don't mind a phased reopening, that's fine, but there's been no enforcement of any of the guidelines. Mayor, I saw your video, which was great. You told people to pay attention to the guidelines of the beach, but nobody's enforcing it. I see in the proposal here from the two council members that it mentions strict rules and adherence to those rules, but who's going to enforce it? I also noticed that the example given was from Vilnius, Lithuania, and that's great. No disrespect to the Baltic republics, and my wife is Latvian descent, but we couldn't find an example west of the Mississippi. Whatever they did in Vilnius is going to be okay. Like I said, I don't mind a phased reopening, but there's been no enforcement. When 4th of July got out of hand, the city council and the police department, they enforced rules about drinking in your front lawn. People didn't like it, but the word got out. Don't come to Huntington. Don't burn couches. Don't destroy property. And now 4th of July is a great time in Huntington. All right. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you for your comments, sir.
Straight concern citizen fire. Bro, if you could talk that kind of smack on this show, you would be Brad. You'd be a 10-time champ. Now, we can't play the video here, but know this. Silk Bra showed up to this town hall meeting exactly as you would expect. Close your eyes and imagine, envision Snitch Bra. What do you think he looks like? Exactly. High top Van sneakers, board shorts, a surf shirt, a Long Beach State hat, and an LA Chargers mask. Because nothing says take me seriously quite like showing up in board shorts and a Long Beach State hat. Silk even dropped what appeared to be a Shaka Bra hand gesture to the mayor and the city council as he dropped that microphone, left the microphone. Now, you might have some trouble believing that that was Silk, so I took the liberty of tightening up the audio just so you can be assured that it was really him, because I know some of you listening were like, it kind of sounds like him, but there are a couple of fake Silks, and the Silk I know does not have fire like that. I went back, I tightened it up, and this is, in fact, evidence that was our Silk.
Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Mayor and Council.
Bruh.
I've been here since 72, lived here my whole life. There's some people out there who don't even live here.
Bruh.
I don't mind a phased reopening, that's fine. But there's been no enforcement of any of the guidelines.
Bruh.
Mayor, I saw your video, which was great.
Bruh.
You told people to pay attention to the guidelines of the beach, but nobody's enforcing it.
Bruh.
I also noticed that the example given was from Vilnius, Lithuania.
Bruh.
And that's great. No disrespect to the Baltic republics. And my wife is Latvian descent.
My wife is still working at 100%. Her business is actually up about 65%.
But
bruh,
we couldn't find an example west of the Mississippi.
Bruh.
Boy, I'll tell you, Silk, I know you're a concerned citizen, but why do you got to keep flexing on how well your wife's business is doing in the midst of this pandemic? And for you to get up in front of the city council and do it, it's one thing to do it here in the jungle, but for you to get up at a town hall meeting and tell those city council members that your wife's business is killing it, that's a bit much, brah. That's a bit much. But that was him. How do I know it was him? The numerous bras and the fact that he was again showing off about his wife's business. Did you notice how many times he also brought up his desire to see some damn enforcement? This dude does not want your guidelines. He wants your freaking hammer, HB.
There's been no enforcement of any of the guidelines, but nobody's enforcing it. But who's going to enforce it? There's been no enforcement. They enforce rules about drinking in your front lawn. Enforcement, enforcing, enforce, enforcement, enforce, enforcing.
He ain't playing. You call him narc bra. I call him enforcer bra.
Brah.
This guy wants enforcement, damn it. What good are rules if nobody is enforcing them? And how about my guy teeing off on the Baltic republics?
I also noticed that the example given was from Vilnius, Lithuania, and that's great. No disrespect to the Baltic republics, but we couldn't find an example west of the Mississippi. Whatever they did in Vilnius is going to be okay.
Fire. Man, those four walls were melting. Whenever someone says no disrespect intended, you know somebody is about to get disrespected, and somebody just did. Silk ain't having that study from Lithuania. That's not good enough for him. He wants some proven results this side of the Mississippi, and you better damn well get them for him, HB. Guess who else was there? Guess who else attended that meeting? I will give you a hint. If there is a smack-off champion in the building, who is always right behind him? My man, Richie Flores, a.k.a. Dick Flowers.
I'm not angry or anything like that. I just wanted to say good luck with putting it all back together for us. We appreciate it. I was reading through the agenda, and I'm looking through Google. I was just curious, this Lithuania, where did that come from exactly, and why is that an example? Or am I not allowed to ask a question?
Sir, we can't engage in a back and forth, so go ahead with your comments.
No, it's just interesting to me because the last thing I can find is May 7th, and the Lithuania reference is just really bizarre to me. Other than that, I support Huntington Beach, and good luck with what you do for us. We appreciate it, okay?
Thank you for your comments. Appreciate that.
Doesn't sound like you appreciate it at all, Richie. Check these dudes out. Man, they freaking hate that Lithuania study so much. Man, don't you ever bring in Baltic Republic stats in front of Silk and Richie. Man, this is HB, not the BR. This is HB, not freaking Lithuania.
Why is that an example?
Answer my question. And no, clones, I don't know if Flores wrote Silk's speech. Now, you might hate these guys for taking their narc act to City Hall. I'm going to go the other way. These two dudes, to me, are not narcs. They're not snitches. They are concerned citizens. They took time out of their day to go down to City Hall and let their voices be heard. You're killing them on Twitter. They're killing their elected officials in person. You tell me what's more impressive. It's a big difference. Tip of the hat to the concerned jungle dweller who wore a hat. A Long Beach State hat. Tip of the hat to concerned jungle dweller citizens of Huntington Beach. Way to show up. Way to show up and represent. Way to run smack on Lithuanian case studies.
No disrespect.
Way to dress
to
up for the occasion. and way to hit the entire city hall with Shaka Bra hand gestures on the way out the door. Because you best believe that Dick Flowers did the same thing. Unless they were just flashing gang signs at him. No, they were Shaka Bra signs. You gotta love how the two tightest wound guys are giving hang loose signs on their way out the building. Keep doing you, Silk Bra. Keep doing you, Richie Bra. They may all hate you both, but I respect it.
Thank you for your comments. Appreciate that.
No, she didn't. She did not appreciate those comments
at all.
Sir,
we can't engage in a back and forth, so go ahead with your comments.
Sir, we will not engage in a back and forth. Don't you ask us about the Lithuania studies that we're citing.
No disrespect to the Baltic Republics, but...
No disrespect to the Baltic Republics.
No disrespect.
Did he then chase that with, some of my best friends reside in the Baltic Republics? I think what he said was, my wife is of Latvian descent.
And my wife is Latvian descent.
Yeah, not only is she of Latvian descent, but she's up 60% in the pandemic. How do I know that? Because Narcbra says it every time he calls.
Her business is actually up about 65%.
But
65%, brah. My bad. So, brah, I got your back, dude. You know I do. Bryant McFadden. Bryant, really good to have you back. First off, how are you and everybody around you doing during this pandemic?
Everybody's around me doing pretty good. Thank you for asking. This has kind of become the new normal. You know, only going out for important things like the grocery store, things of that nature. So I'm starting to kind of get used to this vibe, unfortunately. But, everybody's optimistic that eventually we can get back to some type of normalcy sooner than later. So everybody's in good health. That's the most important thing.
That is. And it is really surreal and really strange. Like, if you were to think back to your playing career and the routine you had during the offseason, how much would it have been impacted by the coronavirus and the fact that team facilities and gyms have been closed for as long as they have?
I think the biggest, adjustment I would have had to make would be the professional trainer or the professional training that I was receiving. For quite some time, going back a month ago, you weren't really allowed to be out being able to go about your training like you would if this was a normal off-season regimen. So I think being able to implement workouts on my own would be the best ideal to try to stay in shape. Now things are starting to open up a little bit. I'm starting to see guys work out with the professional trainers now. But I think the most critical time would have been, that mid-March, early April period where they pretty much locked down everything. And there lies the high school workouts, doing things on your own before you had the means to go out and have professional trainers be able to assist you.
Bryant McFadden is joining us. Exactly. So you tweeted out a clip earlier today, and you were talking about Lamar Jackson and how he's played in the postseason. He has been truly special since he took over as the starter for Baltimore, but his January numbers are not that great. Is that just a couple of bad games against good teams, or in your mind, is that a cause for concern?
I think it's, a few bad games against really good teams on the biggest stage. Now, his rookie year, against the Chargers had an ideal game plan for the Baltimore Ravens. So you can't just put that on Lamar Jackson. But yet and still, he plays the most important position. He plays the most criticized position, which is the quarterback. So you still kind of gave him, he's a rookie, big stage, first postseason game. All right, most rookies struggle on that level. And then a year ago, looking at how well he played in the regular season that led to an MVP award, and then playing against the Tennessee Titans and not seeing what we saw from Lamar Jackson definitely was something to really look at. Now, Jim, the entire team struggled, right? I mean, we saw drop passes from his wide receivers. The play calling was not ideal. We saw his defense clearly couldn't stop the ground and pound attack from the Tennessee Titans. But when you're the MVP, expectations follow you regardless of what the other positions are doing around you. And there lies the opportunity to really dissect to see exactly, is this more about Lamar Jackson or is this more about the entire ball club?
Bryant McFadden is joining us. To that point, Bryant, it's kind of self-evident, but I'm going to ask you, because you've got a pair of rings, How different is playoff football from regular season football?
It's night and day. It's like when you're playing in the postseason, when it comes to NFL terms, it's like a game seven. There's no series. So it's do or die. And both teams have that same mentality. Both coaching staffs have that same mentality. And you don't see the mistakes. And when you do see the mistakes, that usually put that ball club in position to lose. And everything is intense. The intensity is at all-time high. Guys are moving faster, Jim. I remember my rookie year, the preseason, the vets were telling the rookie class, guys, you guys haven't seen nothing yet. I mean, preseason football is okay, but when you get to the regular season, everything goes up 10 levels. And then they said the same thing to us, to the rookies, getting ready for the postseason. And at first I was like, man, listen, I played at Florida State. Okay, preseason football is one thing. Regular season is not that big of a difference. Yes, it is. But when you get to the postseason, guys are moving as fast as they potentially can. I mean, everything is intensified, and you don't see the mistakes that you usually see in the regular season because you're playing good on good.
We're talking to Brian McFadden. All right, so let me get you to stay in the AFC North for 1 minute. When you look at Baker Mayfield, he went into last season. He had all that hype coming off that good rookie season. What was the biggest difference for you between his rookie year and last season?
I think year two, just from the individual standpoint, Jim, I don't think Baker was having fun. You remember his rookie year? He was having fun. You can tell. You can see from his body expression. You can see from his facial expression. He was enjoying the opportunity of playing football. This last year, we didn't see the same demeanor from Baker. I mean, we saw more of Baker on commercials than actually being relaxed on the football field. So I think the fun was not there. And, of course, it's hard to have fun, Jim, when you're struggling, when you're not winning ball games, you're not playing pretty good football. And I think the trust that he had in his coaching staff left. If year one, Freddie Kitchens was getting the best out of Baker Mayfield. He understood what he did well, what he didn't do well. But he put him in position to be successful. And year two, that relationship between coach and player was not tight. It wasn't glued together. And I think that resulted into Baker not trusting what the coaching staff was telling him to do. And because of that, they weren't successful.
Bryant McFadden is joining us. All right, so what are your thoughts on Ben Roethlisberger, Bryant? He got a haircut. He's throwing once again. Steelers GM Kevin Colbert had said earlier in the offseason he thought the team might have a better Ben Roethlisberger after the surgery than even before it. What's your reaction when you hear that?
I mean, you have to be excited. You know, if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, if you're part of the organization, Big Ben is still a top-tier quarterback, in my opinion. I think the last year we saw Big Ben play a full season, 2018, he threw for like 5,000 yards, if I'm not mistaken, over 30 touchdowns. So Big Ben is still a top-level quarterback, in my opinion. And hearing Colbert talk about the strength, you might get a better Big Ben, you know, after this surgery. I mean, other teams should be mindful and should be afraid of that, I think, because looking at his offensive line, the structure, the stability, looking at the wide receivers, and, of course, Connor, this is a big year for Connor and Juju, contract-like years. If those guys are healthy, that offense is going to be entertaining to watch. And then I don't need to talk about the defense, Jim. You know what they have on the defensive side. And I did an HQ hit a few days ago, and, of course, people always call me, you know, they say I'm biased toward the Steelers and I'm a homer. And sometimes I might be. I got two miniature Lombardis in the house because of the Steelers.
You bet.
But when you look at that team from top to bottom, especially if you have a healthy Big Ben, you have to like their chances of not just winning the division, but having a deep postseason run if everything goes accordingly when it comes to health.
So, Brian, what about that defense? For instance, there was a lot of talk right after the Minka Fitzpatrick move. What do you make of how he impacted that defense after the trade with Miami?
Man, listen, Minka made a good defense great. Like, and when you get traded mid-season, during the season, Jim, that's a very, very difficult task. Let's think about the non-football-related priorities you have to deal with. Moving, you know, if you have a family with you, being able to get adjusted to the new area, finding a place to live. And then when it comes to what the football priorities, learning the playbook, learning the verbiage, being able to understand the check. Man, when he got there instantly, he was rolling. So he made a good defense great. And you can tell Keith Butler and his staff, they were using Fitzpatrick the best way possible, something we didn't see with the Miami Dolphins. And Pete Prisco, you know, our colleague with CBS, he did his top 100. Jim, Pete left Micah Fitzpatrick off his top 100 list.
Hmm.
Guy who made all pro. And I jumped on Pete's list from top to bottom. But when I saw Fitzpatrick left off Pete's top 100, clearly I got fired up. I was sweating. I was ready to jump through the monitor at Pete because that was disrespectful to leave a guy like Fitzpatrick, based on what he did last year, off his top 100 list.
Brian McFadden is joining us. I feel you. All right, so what about Tom Brady? What do you make of his decision to go to Tampa, and how do you think he's going to show up there this year?
I'm okay with his decision. Actually, I wanted to see Tom leave the Patriots when it comes to, you know, what he's done. And just from the spotlight, giving us something to talk about, I think it was huge. It was great for the game of football, especially going through the situation that we've been going through when he made this announcement. It was great for us. And the move to go to Tampa is perfect. I like it. You go into a situation where you have a veteran coach that has won a championship. He's been around veteran elite-type quarterbacks, an upcoming play caller in Byron Leftwich. And then personnel-wise, Jim, I mean, you got two number ones at the wide receiver position, in my opinion, in Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. And then you revamped the offensive line, made some additions to the offensive line, especially in the draft. Then you do the unthinkable, right? I thought Rob Gronkowski was okay jumping off the top rope and elbowing people in wrestling.
Right.
I didn't think Gronkowski would ever come back for his outstanding, phenomenal spike in the end zone. But you go recruit. Well, Tom basically recruited Gronkowski out of retirement. So you add him to the thick of things, and with O.J. Howard, and you got Cameron Brate, you got three nice pieces at the tight end positions that you can easily win you ball games. So in all, big-time move. And, yes, if you don't know by now, I am picking the Buccaneers to win the NFC South.
Bryant McFadden is joining us. All right, now you and I have talked about cards in the past. I know you were watching The Last Dance. How do you think that Michael Jordan would have done in some of the legendary card games that you and the Steelers used to have back in the day?
Oh, my goodness. Hey, Jim, it's funny that you mentioned that because I had a few conversations with some of the guys I used to play with. I would have loved to play cards with MJ. Number one, the reason why, there are a few reasons why I would love to play with MJ. Number one, his money is not running out anytime soon. So there's not a hand he don't like. He's just going to play, lose. And he's okay with that because his money trail is extremely long. So that'll be one of the reasons why. Secondly, for me, the opportunity to hit him across the head. I mean, you heard stories about Michael Jordan going to casinos and losing a million, right? Because he just wants to continue to play. He's so competitive. He don't believe he can lose. Man, we would have played all night long. Man, I know we talked about the story about the Super Bowl against Arizona. If Mike would have been in that game, we probably wouldn't have went to sleep at all.
That is the funniest thing, too. Like, he's never going to run out of money, and he's never had a hand that he didn't love. How about playing golf with Mike, right? I mean, there's never been a shot that he didn't think he could hit. Mike's something, man. You better be rich if you're going to play like that.
Oh, no question. And also, too, I'm not a golfer, but just watching The Last Dance and hearing some of the stories that were related to The Last Dance, Michael, I don't think he was a good golfer, Jim, because he lost a lot of money on the golf course. You never really heard Mike winning anything significantly speaking on the golf course. So that's, if I was a golfer, yeah, I want Mike on the golf course because he can't play, but he thinks he can play. And those are the guys that love to bet on themselves when they don't really realize they're not that good.
Exactly. The thing is, and golf has always been the great equalizer. That's why guys like it, because you can never master it. You can never perfect it. It's great. And then when it's right, it feels so good. You're always chasing that feeling. Brian, the one thing I can't figure out about Mike, and I don't know why people are talking about it, but not to the extent that I thought they would. My man looked like he was burning cigars off of cigars. I know he was kind of a freaky athlete. I know the guy's work ethic was absolutely amazing. How could he smoke the way he smoked and get up and down the way he did?
I mean, extremely talented and just gifted. Some guys have the it factor when it comes to taking care of their bodies. They can do it 50% and still give you 100% in whatever it is they need to do on the court, on the football field. And also, too, you know what was mind-boggling for me was seeing these guys drink beer after a game.
Right. Well,
they were drinking canned beers after a win in the locker room.
Like the thought being that these guys were slamming beer after games, or the guys like that who were like legends were drinking light beer and could do a hell of a lot better.
No question. And I'm thinking, like, I was watching The Last Dance and I was like, you know what? What would have happened if we, after a football game and in the locker room, guys were just drinking beers? You know what I mean? So I don't think that would ever happen in today's game. But for them, that was back in 97, 98. That's not too long ago. They were actually drinking beers. You know what I mean? So I would imagine other teams were doing the same thing. But it also tells you when it comes to your structure, your body structure, things that you can do in certain sports. And some things that you can't do in certain sports.
I don't know, man. I think to your point, though, it's more about the fact that they're the act of drinking light beer on a training table while they're suited up after the game. It just was such a funky look. That wasn't the 60s either, by the way. That was the 90s. But then you fast forward, Brian, how cool is my man in that $4,000 tumbler loaded up with his $1,800 tequila and just kind of rocking it, doing the interview. Like, he's just sitting there with that tumbler. I mean, why did he do that? Because he could. He's Mike. But that was a classic look. So whatever we thought about that look in the light beer after the game, he more than made up for it with the tequila or the scotch or whatever he had in that tumbler.
Man, no question. The thing is, I wonder how much that scotch or whatever it was cost that he was drinking. You know, they like there's no telling how much a shot of whatever that was is. In whatever bar you can go get it at, or restaurant you can go get it at. But, man, Mike is a living legend. I think people forgot how good he was. I actually watched Game 7 last night against Utah, and that was a game we saw in The Last Dance that Scotty had back spasms. But the way Mike carried that team was unbelievable. And just I forgot how good Mike was. You know, I was in high school, early high school, watching him towards the end of his career. But, man, Michael Jordan was a bad man, man. His mentality was seek, hit, and destroy whoever it is. And he often did that.
You know, guys my age, since we covered it, and I used to interview guys on that team, Mike was not an accessible guy. Like, you couldn't talk to Mike. But I remember very clearly, Mike was a very, very bad man. And then finally, to your point about the numbers, I think the speculation was he was pulling from one of his own bottles of tequila, his Jordan-branded tequila. And I think it was $1,800 for the bottle. So if you're asking me what would a glass of that cost, I just know this. I found a bottle of gin, Bryant, that was $800. And I found it in a hotel once. And I said, I've got to have a martini. That martini cost me $125. And I did it just once,
really?
Just to say I could do it, just to say that I did do it. So if an $800 bottle was a $125 martini, we're looking at probably a $250 glass of his tequila. Because
wow.
He could. Because he's Mike,
hey, but,
man.
Hey, Jim, you know, you big time, though, so you can handle that type stuff.
What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. All right, let's get it. Big show for you, and we are front-loaded. So episodes 9 and 10 of The Last Dance aired last night. And there were plenty of moments. There were the battles with the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah! It became personal with me.
Wait.
What?
It became personal
what?
With you?
It became personal.
This series
personal
should not have been called The Last Dance. It should have simply been called It Became Personal With Me. Langston Galloway joining us.
He really is. Just like everybody else. He, you know, he makes mistakes and does everything just like me and you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I have anything in common with Mike. I've got no game.
I eat the pizza all by myself. Nobody else eats.
Yo, pizza. You may have gotten over on me, but now it's personal. Now you're on my list.
Food poison.
Pizza, you hoe. Clearly, Mike got the last word with pizza.
Emailed.
Five guys delivering a pizza is normal, right? Regards, Jenna Jameson.
Hawkins done less to enhance your brand role than that crop-dusting valet from the Geisha House.
And you brought him on air 78 times. You ran him 57 of those times. The guy is basically Parody Larry.
Stay in your lane, fellas, and keep my name out your
mouth. Chris! My man, get out of the water. Get to safe land.
That was a truly pathetic segment by Canada.
Woo!
Nick Nurse is joining us once again.
They play D when you're watching The Last Dance. Something, something to 76 or something, something to 80.
Or something, something to 54. Nick Nurse joining us.
Yeah, that's right.
Chris's smack is so weak, Magic Johnson's medicine couldn't fix it.
Magic Johnson's medicine couldn't fix it. Is that the type of thing you think is going to get you into the smack off because it won't?
Attain the HIV?
I can't wait until players show up picketing that their constitutional dipping rights have been violated. No Coke, no dip, no jaw, not even any Red Man. Oh, hell no. And good luck trying to ban fighting when a guy's dealing with those nicotine fits.
Ben Golliver,
we watched Kobe in retirement. I can only imagine what LeBron's going to be in retirement. Do you really think that LeBron's going to be grinding gears? I don't think so, right?
No, I hear you, man. Look, Jordan was great at basketball, but evolution, not really his thing, right?
Dude, you can't even get through a call because your lungs are shattered. Just get off of me. Hey, Matt in Garden City, get off of me.
Hey, you, Reggie, get off of me. Hey, Matt, get off of me.
Twitter.
Hashtag bring in the hacks.
Bring the hacks in.
I hate the six like I hate my ex-wife, but they're mine. The rest of Canada is our bitch. Call us Big Daddy. We're your father.
Chuck E. Cheese. Man, imagine knowing your pizza sucks so bad that you have to change the name of the restaurant just to get people to buy it. Let's just run this scam until somebody figures it out. Let's jam as much provolone into our pockets as we can.
Your kid can be a kid.
Herm Edwards, if the phone rings, do you owe it to yourself to answer?
I'm in a really good place, and I'm going to give them some candidates when they call me, and it won't be me.
There you go.
This is my last job, partner. You're going to be talking to me the next 5 years.
Come on, man. Ain't nobody in this earth will ever come and try to take food off my plate.
Come on my plane, and you try and lift food off my plate, you're going to get your ass kicked.
Re-and-beat.
You want to take my food? Come and get it. Tough guy, you can get this tray of airplane food, and then you can get these hands.
These hands. And if you didn't do anything back in the day, you had 7 years, to do something. You're not going to do anything now. So just shut the hell up.
Go ahead, rack that, Alvin.
Rack him!
We are joined by PJ Fleck.
My goodness, Zoom has changed our entire life, right? FaceTime's one thing, but Zoom, if everybody together. And I think we're going to be applying a lot of lessons we learned from this as we move into the future.
I mean, bro, it makes sense that you remind me of a hot dog because your face looks like it clumped when somebody cooked it. I mean, bro.
What is it about personal appearance is not show fodder that you don't get?
Next week, when we're back on Tuesday, we should have these videos bumping in and out.
It's not Pornhub, all right? It's the Jim Rome radio program on CBS Sports Network. Let's keep this clean. There isn't enough time to do anything that you shouldn't do, so don't do it.
It's not my fault if I have to go over to the corner and rope a coiler inside that decorative vase.
Rope a coiler. Wicker does suck. I've always hated wicker.
The thing that I'm most afraid of is the thing that I want and or need the most. So I've learned to kind of say, f*** it, and just walk headlong into those metaphorical flames.
Tremendous Friday to all of you, wherever you might
Friday.
Be.
Wait, Rome?
It's not Friday. It is for me.
Well, you do the math. I'm doing the Alfredo.
Math slays me every single time.
You came to my house in Agoura for a party. I believe it was 1978.
Now, I was not going to house parties in eighth grade.
No disrespect to the Baltic Republics.
No disrespect.
But we couldn't find an example west of the Mississippi.
What, is there no case study from Laos?
Bruh.
I got your back, dude. You know I do.
We're still frog getting that face tat, completing this downward spiral.
His money is not running out anytime soon. So there's not a hand he don't like. He's just going to play.
Roach day.
Can't wait for you guys to start watching us on some TV and competing again.
You got a decent looking lady.
Debacle of a car.
Thank you, brother.
Brother,
both Sky Bob, go Gophers.
You big time, though, so you can handle that type stuff.
Appreciate that.
We go way back for one.
Shakey's on Ventura Boulevard, yo.
Yo.
Chuck E. Cheese.
Good night now!
Oh, man, there's so much good stuff in there. He is Mo Williams. Mo, it is so good to have you back. It's been a minute or two since you and I have spoken. I want to get caught up on your life and your new opportunity. But first, how are you and everybody around you doing during the pandemic, Mo?
Hey, Jim, first of all, man, it's a pleasure talking to you, man. We go way back for one. But the family's doing good. You know, family's safe. Everybody's good. I'm excited about this opportunity to lead this program to prominence. You know, I'm excited.
Mo, you and I do go way back. I'm so happy to have you back, and I'm really pumped for your opportunity. Now, you were named head coach at Alabama State last week, and you were officially introduced yesterday, but this is something you had been preparing for a long time. In fact, you said back in 2005, your third year in the NBA, that you knew you would one day get into coaching. When did you first have that thought, and how did you know?
Well, that was that time. You know, I was in my third year in the NBA in that summer. You know how it goes. Summertime, you know, we're going on vacations. We're going to Bahamas, Dominican Republic, anywhere for a month or so just to kind of get a little R&R. You know, that summer I took the time and traveled with a bunch of kids, man. We went across the country playing games, and I coached them, I mentored them, and things like that. And that's where the bug started. And then a few years after that, like in 2008, I started my own youth program, which I had over 150 kids in it from all the way from age 9 through high school. And in an 8-year span, probably had over 50 kids get Division I scholarships in my program, which led to the next step was being a Division I coach. And I've done this for the last 2 years out here in L.A. at Cal State Northridge to prepare myself for the opportunity that's in front of me now to be a head coach. And all the experience and everything I've learned through that process has prepared me for the moment.
Mo Williams joining us, the new head coach at Alabama State. I absolutely love that you were an assistant at Cal State Northridge for a couple of reasons. Number one, Mo, 818 for life. I grew up in the 818. And number two, you were in the Big West. And I went to UC Santa Barbara, so I know that conference really, really well. What was the experience like at Northridge, and what did you think of that conference?
It was great. You know, coming into the conference at first, I had no clue what it entails. You'll be pleasantly surprised with the talent. We have one of our own. He's a freshman and a sophomore. We had him 2 years, and guess what? He's in the draft. You know, that gives you an idea of the talent level that's in the Big West. We did really well the 2 years we was here. Before we got here, they won 3 Division I games total the previous season, and we come in the first year and finish tied for 4th in the league, and in the second year, which is previous, we finished 2nd in the league. So that's what I learned, you know, how to build a program, understanding how to build a culture, set your foundation, and carry on from there. So there's a lot of things that I've learned through this process, especially at Northridge. Being out, going to Alabama State, we have kind of similar resources, similar ways to be successful. So I've already got a blueprint here on how to be successful, and just taking that blueprint and just carrying it over.
Mo Williams joining us. I'm going to ask you about your program in just 1 minute. One more thought about the Big West, and this is amazing, Mo, because you guys went into UC Santa Barbara and you beat my Gauchos. You went to the Thunderdome, and I know you just said that you were pleasantly surprised by the talent level. Let me take you back in the day. Can you imagine what it was like back in the day when Tark and UNLV used to roll through the Big West, and they would come into our house? Brian Shaw was with UCSB, but Larry Johnson, Greg Anthony, Anderson Hunt, all the fellas, Mo Scurry, they would roll through there. Can you imagine what the Big West was like back then? And we were right in the middle of it, man. As somebody who played 14 years in the NBA, you could respect that. That little conference was going off back in the day. Could you envision that?
Absolutely. We talk about that because obviously when I got to the Big West Conference, you know, I started to learn more about it. Started to learn about previous teams that was in it. I mean, you think about, you know, a lot of the teams that's, you know, like a UNLV, those type of teams, and, you know, they was in that conference. That conference was rolling. And you talk about the Big West, you know, probably outside the Big West, you talk about it was the Pac-10 at that time, but that was probably the biggest conference outside of Big West on this side of the Mississippi. So the Big West is a good conference. It's still a good conference. You know, it's still a competitive conference. I really enjoyed every moment. I was happy here, but obviously the head coaching position was something I had a goal to do. And I'm looking forward to that opportunity.
And I really respect that you as an NBA champion could kind of indulge me by talking about the Big West. Now, what's really impressive to me, Mo, is the way you went about this. I mean, a lot of guys with your career might have said, I'm an NBA champion. I'm an all-star. I played 14 years in the NBA. Just give me a head coaching gig. I'm not going to pay my dues. I don't need to be an assistant. I don't need to go back in the summertime and deal with AAU ball. But you were grinding it out. You didn't need to, but you did. Why was that your approach?
Because I wanted to, as I say, get it out the mud. You know.
What do you mean by that? I like that.
Yeah, I just wanted to get out of the mud. It means just wanted to just start from the bottom, you know, start from the bottom and learn, you know, and just do things the right way, you know, get experience, things like that. It's no different from my preparation to be a professional athlete. It was countless hours I put in, you know, getting up at 5 in the morning, going to run, then going in the weight room, then working out in the gym, then going to school, and then doing the same thing after school. That same process that developed me into the player I am. So as a coach, I wanted to take that same approach where learning from the ground up. You know, I didn't want nothing to be given to me. Nothing has ever been given to me. So I took the same approach in coaching. You know, just learn, you know, start from the bottom, you know, do all the little things, and obviously how life works. You know, you build up on a lot of little things that add up to something huge, and that's what has occurred. You know, that's the reason I'm in the position I am today, prepared for it, and that's what I didn't want to happen to me, just me getting a job just off of what who I am, my name, and what I've done. I wanted to be on what I, what the experience I have, and the know-how of I know what I'm doing. And I wanted to get to that point. I feel real confident and real comfortable that I grasped everything, I understand everything, and I can lead my program.
Mo Williams joining us. So I'm really curious, with your pedigree, with that mindset, with that work ethic, you were going to have opportunities. Clearly, what was it about this opportunity with Alabama State that made you think this is the place where you want to take that shot?
Well, obviously, you know, I went to the University of Alabama, and, you know, those are my roots. You know, being back in Alabama, Montgomery, my family is from Mobile, Alabama. Obviously, I grew up in Mississippi, so that area is somewhere where I'm very familiar with, and far as recruiting, far as just being comfortable and things like that. So when I was thinking about which head job that I really want, I thought it checked all the boxes. Learning more about the opportunity, I got more and more excited. You know, we got great facilities, got a great community. We have a great staff that I'm working with. So I'm excited on all fronts. You know, I'm ready to, you know, obviously working now, but I was ready to get to work.
Mo Williams, my guest. So, Mo, what does a Mo Williams coach basketball team look like?
Well, for one, it's a foundation. You know, you got to set your culture, and you want your culture to be obviously a championship culture. And when you talk about a championship culture, you're talking about setting, getting the right guys, and even the current guys that's coming back, you know, cleaning the slate for them. Because one thing about players, I'm a player too, and I can relate to players also. You know, different style, different coaches, and different culture changes a player the way they approach the game and where they play. So I'm excited about the team I have coming back. We're recruiting some great kids. My main thing, the way I coach, I get to the style of play. But my main goal, man, I just want to make a point of this, because it's the most important factor is getting these kids graduated. One thing about it, every kid think they can be a professional athlete. And a lot of kids go to school thinking that's what they're going to school for. And it's almost training their mind to understand that academics is the most important thing. And that's my focus. But at the same time, if I can get them focused and mature in that level, the on-court things, it'll carry over to on the court. Now, on the court, you know, the style of play, I mean, obviously, you know, modern day, you know, you want to get up and down the floor and run. You want to get easy baskets. But to be a championship caliber team, you got to have a great half court offense, because it come down the stretch the last 6 minutes of the game. It's not going to be a lot of run outs, and it's going to be a lot of easy baskets. So you got to be really good. But three areas you got to be really consistent at. You know, you got to rebound the ball, you got to make your free throws, and obviously you got to, you know, lead the league with the less turnovers. That's a championship caliber team if you're doing those things consistently every single night. Defensively, obviously, we want guys to score over us, not around us, not through us, but over us. You know, so those are kind of points of emphasis, you know, and the adjustments that go out through the course of a game, even the course of a year. You know, you adjust to your team, you adjust to your personnel, on what sets you run and things like that. So, you know, we're going to have a fun brand to watch. We're going to be exciting. We're going to have some athletes. We're going to be fun to watch.
Mo Williams joining us. Mo, one last thought before you go. I mentioned you're an NBA champion. Nobody can ever take that from you. I mean, it'd be very easy for me to ask you about LeBron. It'd be easy for me to ask you about Kyrie. But instead, I want to ask you about somebody else. You've made the point that you cannot find a better guy or a more loyal guy than J.R. Smith. What was J.R. like as a teammate?
Man, that's my boy, man. You got to think about it. You know, people, he gives you guys so much stuff to open the show with,
dude,
and that's his personality, man.
Believe
that's what
that
you love about him.
Believe that. Why do you think I'm asking you about this guy? I love Swish. I'm sorry, Mo. Go ahead.
You know, he's just authentic. You know, he don't think about saying, okay, I'm just going to be politically correct all the time. No, he just kind of be honest. And that's the person he is. You know, I love him to death, man. He's a great teammate, and he works extremely hard. I mean, he puts in work on his craft. I mean, if you follow him on social media, he's always in the gym, even though he didn't play this year. He was always in the gym. And that's something he don't get credit for, just, you know, how hard he worked and how much he put into his craft. I mean, this is something we do for – that's our livelihood, you know. And at the same time, he takes that very seriously. And people kind of get misconstrued because of his personality. But at the same time, man, JR, as a teammate, as a person, as a friend, you know, he's a great person.
This is why I wanted to ask you about him, because you're right. I mean, he's given us a lot to talk about. He's given us a lot of content, but there's a lot more to the guy than meets the eye. Mo Williams is the new head basketball coach at Alabama State, an NBA champ, an NBA All-Star, a 14-year vet. Mo, it's so good to get caught up. Again, I'm really pumped for you and the opportunity. I know we'll do it again soon, and it's great to have you back in the jungle, Mo. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you, man.
Rob, you've been around a long, long time. What has the last week been like for you, and what do you make of all the jungle response, and what was it like to talk that kind of noise to the mayor?
Brad, it's been great. I want to thank you for engaging in civic duty and political activism talk this week. And as always, I've enjoyed 100% support from the clones. Word is that the hate coming from Twitter, it's all Russian bots, brah. They're trying to divide us and polarize us, brah. But everyone else, it's been 100% support. So it's been very epic, except for that guy, that kook who called from Arkansas. Glad I could help your daughter out with some new vocab. But that metaphor you engaged in was gave new meaning to the word meandering and muddled. So that was good. Nice, brah. I want to tell you good luck this weekend, brah, on your mini vacation and your fortnight Armageddon that you're going to be dealing with, brah. That's going to be brutal. Our mayor, our city council, they haven't gotten this much run, and I know they don't like it. I'm going to hit them with links. I think our mayor took down one of her Twitter feeds, so she's running scared. But, you know, they say sunlight is the best disinfectant, brah. So it's been awesome. I'm going to suggest something. Alvy, I know I'm walking the thin line of blasphemy in the jungle, so hope you're running tape. And just give me a second. It's only a suggestion. But instead of Silk Bra, I think I should now be known as Premium Content Machine in HB. He glossed me. He glossed me. Later, bra.
Later, bra.
Good night now.